My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day.
Open the voice gate for August 6, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to us, you can click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircled.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a reoccurring or one-time donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Join alongside, as always, Case Lowe. And Case, I have to ask you, this morning, I know I was really on the mend watching my track cycling, but did you catch any important Twitter spaces this morning?
I did not. I have a lot to say about the Olympics and not a lot to say about Twitter spaces, but what's up with the Twitter space universe?
Oh, the most important man in Dragon Gate right now, Manny Skywalker, allegedly hosted a Twitter space this morning.
I love that. He's a go-getter. That's why Shun Skywalker likes him.
Yeah, apparently, allegedly, it was Skywalker impersonating him.
I love this. I love this. More on Minoru and Skywalker in a second. You really jumped right in this week. I've got Olympics to talk about.
All right, so we have to talk about the sport that's taken over the world, and that's kayak cross.
Okay, aware of it, have not seen any of it yet.
Okay, so four people races. They have like a drop down chute that they drop them like 3 meters into the water on their kayaks. Like they slide down into it. And then it's basically a slalom course that they also have to do barrels underwater in. So
I love
four,
it.
four kayaks doing this at the same time.
Is this a new sport this year?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I've got a semi-new sport recommendation. I watched something over the weekend. It debuted in 2021, but I didn't watch any of it. So what I was watching, I was unaware of its existence until it was on TV, and I couldn't believe what was happening as long as it went on. And I have a full five-star recommendation for you. Did you catch any of Team Judo?
No, but I did watch the heavyweight finals.
Okay.
So I did know that Team France was the big highlight there, because I'm blanking on the guy's name, Teddy.
Yeah, I can't think of his name. But Reiner. Reiner. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But they have a wheel choosing what matchup has to happen.
So yes. So I watched the bronze medal match on Saturday when it was happening, and then I had to go about my day on Saturday, and I've got everything DVR'd on YouTube TV. So Sunday morning, I went back and watched the gold medal match. So Team Judo, there's six weight classes. For the simple way of looking at it is, it's like men's middleweight, women's bantamweight, men's heavyweight, women's flyweight, men's light heavyweight, women's, you know, whatever. There's three male weight classes, three female weight classes, and they trade off. So it's a little bit like a cybernetico match where there's a batting order. The order stays the same throughout. They never go like heavyweight man against like flyweight woman, which would be its own interesting thing. But it's 1-6. It's a best of six series. And I feel comfortable spoiling this because it won't hurt the enjoyment if you go back and rewatch it. But both the bronze, which was, I think, Brazil and Korea, and then the gold, which was Japan and France, both ended in a tie. They finished 3-3. And that is when they go to the Jumbotron, like it's spin the wheel, make the deal, and they roll a weight class onto the Jumbotron, and whatever that weight class is, those people fight it out for the gold in like a sudden death match. Mike, it's unbelievable how entertaining this is, because I like judo anyways. It's, you know, outside of basketball, it's my go-to sport during the Olympics. I really, really enjoy it. This made me hate wrestling, because it goes to show how unimaginative, especially American wrestling, is. This was closer to like a Dragon Gate stipulation than it was, you know, like core Olympic level sport.
I'm right now looking at the scorecards, and it is fascinating, where like you see like that Brazil Italy one where it's like, okay, we go to the wheel, and it's going to be women flyweight go.
Yeah, exactly. And then the men's one, or the gold medal, again, I think this is a worthy spoiler. I hope this convinces people to watch it rather than stay away. It's the heavyweights. It's the male heavyweights. So yeah. The French guy who we were just talking about goes up against Japan's heavyweight, and it's unbelievable. It is, without a doubt, it is my new favorite sport in the entire Olympics. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It made me hate wrestling because we're not doing this. I don't understand how wrestling isn't doing this. I don't understand how anybody in wrestling isn't seeing that and immediately taking it and putting it on their TV, or putting it in Korakuen, or putting it in Nagoya, or putting it in Osaka. What a phenomenal gimmick it is.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, and this is just a different framework. I'm forgetting what the ladies pro wrestling versus All Japan Women 4-on-4 match that happened at Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
That they completely, it was like, all right, we're going to do 4 5-minute periods, and then after that, then we're going to open it up from it being like singles matches and then being like the tag match. And it's just like, those are the things that, at least for me, I feel like it's like whenever you're playing within the system and finding something completely different, if it's a spin a deal, make it spin the deal, make the match, or if it is something like that. Here's an analog here, Case. My favorite part on Olympic track cycling, which is my favorite thing to watch at the Olympics, isn't the team pursuit or team sprint. Or team sprint, I mean, they get up to like 60 kilometers an hour, and for pursuit you're doing basically 4 kilometers in about 3 minutes and 40 seconds on this track, and you have to like keep in it. And with this, the most interesting ones to me are the optimums and the Madison races, because at least for the optimum, it's 4 different races in one. So you get to have a little bit of everything. Whereas with the Madison, it was the one I think I've talked to you about, where it's like they have kind of like rankings and you tag in and you tag out within the race. Okay, it's the most fascinating stuff possible. And it's just like taking the established idea, if it's being judo with like the wheel, or within track cycling with like, okay, we have to go around this track somehow, and just like, what can we do to make it different? And it creates completely compelling, different, completely compelling sport out of anything. And if pro wrestling could get their act together in a lot of ways and learn some things about this, I mean, man, to just imagine like what stuff you could be doing with like the idea of a Cybernetico or a Gauntlet.
I know. You know, the last American innovation match we had was the Elimination Chamber, and I fear that, I guess maybe Ultimate X, I don't know which one came first. I guess they were around the same time, but that's not what I'm looking for. You know, that's more gimmick based into this sport based. And
Championship Scramble, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It just, I look at stuff like this, and you're right, that Joshi 4-on-4 match, which I watched when you and Alan and I were doing Greatest Stress Forever a few years ago. Like, that's a great comp. There's nothing like that. And I guess we can segue into this, because I had a conversation with Tony Khan today, which I'll talk about in just a second. But like, I guess in my heart of hearts, that's what I was hoping AEW was going to be when it started, was a mix of Crockett and then a mix of like really sporty, almost like Evolve on steroids level pro wrestling. And it wasn't ever that, and it's certainly not going to be that now, which is a bummer, because I still think there's a giant hole in the market for stuff like that. But I did have a conversation with Tony Khan today. How AEW PR reached out to me and said, do you want to talk to Tony Khan? And I said, yeah, of course I do. And so we had about a half hour conversation that should, unless this podcast goes up in the very middle of the night, that should be out by the time most people hear this. I will link it on my social media. I'll put it in the AEW channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord as well, so people can check that out. It's, you know, Tony doing media rounds. It's not the juiciest thing you've ever heard, but there are some interesting hologram notes in terms of just the vision that he has for hologram. There's some clarification on who is quote-unquote in the room when it comes to the AEW creative process. And there's an update on the status of Strong Hearts, because of course there is, because I talked to Tony Khan. There's an update on the status of Strong Hearts in AEW at the very end of that interview. So thank you to my shoot job, because they were interested in talking to me because of the platform that my shoot job has. And it worked out quite nicely. Tony was a delightful human.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what he has to say about Strong Hearts. I wonder what his takes are on Modern Glade, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I was telling this, you know, to you off the air, but the one thing I didn't get into was what his level of consumption is of wrestling outside of AEW at this point, because I would imagine it's next to none, but it's also Tony Khan, so who knows. But
a lot of plane flights. I mean, he was in Paris.
That's right. No, during this interview, you'll hear a lot of, oh man, that's a great question. And then he'll kind of answer what I ask him, and then he'll plug Tony Storm or MJF or Brian Danielson. And I respect it. He was so kind, and he is a master of answering questions while not answering them.
I mean, one of the things about AEW is I feel like 5 years ago they would have put like the Rock and Rolls out there tomorrow, and you've been like, great question. I think that it's very interesting how Minnie Skywalker has come about, but boy, do we have a great show for coming to you tomorrow from the Lawrence Jewell Memorial Coliseum in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Well, that was one of the great strengths of AEW at the beginning, was it felt like they really respected wrestling history. And I remember tweeting this once, where I forget, it might have been something with the Rock and Rolls, I don't know. But I just remember they did some sort of segment with some sort of old guy, and I was like, man, this is really nice. And nice things don't happen in wrestling a lot. And you think about, you know, WWE at this point has just completely abandoned anybody that isn't totally in their canon. But you go back 20 years and they would have, you know, a Bockwinkel at ringside for a pay-per-view or something. And it was just small. And, you know, you hear stories about Kevin Dunn complaining about it. You know, Kevin Dunn, when they ran a pay-per-view in St. Louis and they rolled out some old NWA guys, you know, him complaining about how nobody knows who these guys are and nobody gives a shit and this, that, and the other thing. And you felt like it was like, oh no, they're the bridge. You know, they're really helping these old guys have one last nice moment before they head off into the sunset. And we don't really get that anymore.
Yeah, Humpty Wheeler, people like that. Yeah. I feel like we're always like a presence in. at least for like when I would go to shows up in Charlotte when they ran the Bojangles Coliseum, they always kind of made a deal about being in Charlotte and at that venue for that. And they run some of the old Crockett places, and they always have, which is one of those things that like I know everyone's entranced by the video game stadium right now, but like the when you're doing like Crockett territory, you're like, oh, you're almost right next to the Spartanburg War Memorial where they used to tape it. And there's a certain part of me that's like, oh, I kind of wish that they would go and they would run some of those venues like that, like the Bojangles, and do have those like Crockett kind of vibes, because at one time they really did have that. And I feel like in 2021, when they came back from Daly's Place, they kind of lost that a little bit, but they developed that the other aura at least there for a couple of years.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, like, you know, they lost the Codyverse, and at one point I was perhaps Cody's biggest critic, and even into AEW, you know, that's before AEW, but even into AEW, I always sort of side-eyed Cody. I really did not trust him or his decision-making or his vision a ton, but there is a level of authenticity that he brought to AEW that I do greatly miss. And I sadly, you know, I wish that the other side of the coin was people to come full circle here that were like really into sports-based pro wrestling and not Attitude Era, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, like that's the big wonder about the sports-based idea was how much that really could have done if they actually really embraced it, you know, because no one really other than like The Chase, I feel like, and even then, like we're talking so far back, like that has not been something that necessarily has been like applied to like mass pro wrestling. I guess you could say the Impact Box and what they did with Fox Sports and with that, but that was I feel like still at a smaller scale. Like,
yeah, completely.
Like, we never got to see what the true sports based thing. I mean, the rankings were worked and were a joke from the start. Like, that was like the one kind of play for that, and that's I mean, it is what it is. But
well, I was into the rankings more than most, because I always looked at it as it was just like college football. You know, there wasn't a rhyme or reason for some of those things, and that's what made it intriguing. And unfortunately, the grifters got their way.
Man, unfortunately, sometimes that's the way it goes.
It is. I don't know. I sometimes think back, like lately I've been thinking about like Peak Evolve. And it was just like, oh man, that was so easy to watch and so simple. And, you know, Gabe would try to do angles and they wouldn't work, but there was an overall theme to the promotion that everybody agreed on. And it was a little like Dragon Gate. Yeah. Yes. The Gatekeepers. What's Jocka doing? Is that guy still wrestling?
I think Jocka might be fully gone now. I know he like made like a brief like COVID reappearance in some places.
Let me pop up his cage match here real quick.
Yeah,
he wrestled in May of this year in Florida.
Teaming yeah, I know with he moved Sean to Orlando.
Maluda. Yeah, teaming with Sean Maluda. Interesting. Yeah, okay. He just does Florida Indies. That's a shame. That guy's really good.
Yeah, he was always so much like. Jocka was on Elevation 3 years ago.
That's crazy. Cause I mean, he was doing the tag team with Dickinson, and
yeah,
even before Dickinson was who we thought he was. That was never my guy. I always thought he was a corny pro wrestler. But if you go back and look at Jocka's 2017, it's a singles match with ACH. It's a singles match with Yehi, who I greatly miss, even despite some of his questionable personality traits. It was the Evolve title match with Zack Sabre Jr., which was super good. He had another match with Zack Sabre Jr. that was super good. Like, this guy was a great pro wrestler in the year 2017. He had three matches with Zack in 2017. I don't remember that. Holy cow. I got to find some of this WWN, like, Flow Slam era Evolve. I haven't run across it in a while, and I just imagined it would be, like, comfort food. I'd really like to revisit some of this.
I think the thing that kind of like got me at least as it is towards him, as I'm like looking at this, is like, oh, basically like that was it for him, and then he went away.
Yeah,
essentially,
like, because he wasn't like a big indie guy before that. He was like a Beyond Wrestling Chikara guy, but wasn't ever. He wasn't the face of Chikara. He wasn't the face of Beyond. Like, Gabe actually stumbled into something with him, and really. really made something of him.
Right. And it was always felt like that Jaka, at least out of the overall like team Pazuzu, like what have you, like out of everything at that time in 2017, it felt like he was the one that was like most ready to go. Right. Like, I was like, oh, Jaka like has the ability and it has the charisma and everything. Like like if you were to start AEW 2 years before, like I feel like Jaka would be someone you would put on your watch list for that.
Easily. Yeah, because he had a good look too.
Right, yeah.
Wow. Sure. Evolve 77. Let me run through this card before we talk about Dragon Gate. Opening tag match, 6-man tag. Barrett Brown, Darby Allin, and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ethan Page and the Gatekeepers. I remember that because Darby jumped, like did a coffin drop off of a pole. Tracy Williams versus Laredo Kid. Chris Dickinson and Jaka versus Jason Kincaid and Sammy Guevara. ACH versus Fred Yehi. Matt Riddle versus all caps Dustin in a no DQ match that kicked
ass. That match
ass.
Rule.
Yes, that match rule. Kicked yes. ass. Timothy Thatcher versus Jeff Cobb, which I remember being horrible. And then Zack Sabre Jr. versus Chris Hero and Hero's indie send off.
Yeah, that was the night after the ring broke on Casa.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that was oddly enough against Jaka.
Right, yeah. Whoa.
Wow, I forgot that was that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Did Kaz ever wrestle again? No, he did not.
No,
Evolve 76, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's now, last time I heard, a firefighter in Charleston.
Yeah, seemed to be living a very happy life free of Gabe Sapolsky the last time I checked.
Yeah, and seemed to like not have like a like long-term health concerns, you know, considering.
Yeah, well, I mean, every day Sal should wake up and thank God that Peter Kasa didn't sue him.
I mean, that ring just like the way that it was versus the Keith Lee and Chris Hero match, that was just hoo boy.
Embarrassing. Also, I'm now looking at Casa's Wikipedia and I forgot that, or his cage match, and I forgot that at one point he was in a tag team called Nuclear Casa Roll.
Yep, with Chase Cauliflower Brown.
5 stars. Yeah. That is where is that in modern wrestling? Where is the Nuclear Casa Roll of our time? It doesn't exist.
I mean, like Chase Brown, I remember being a Carolina's like indie jobber who had like an awful look and that kind of work he always brought cauliflower with him. Like he had like a very short Ring of Honor tenure.
I love that. Do you remember Alabama Attitude?
Alabama Attitude. Is that was that like I'm blanking on his name now. Small guy from Adam, what's his name? Priest. Is that Adam Priest tag team?
It was, hold on, I just lost. It was Corey Hollis was the guy that I always remember. It was Corey Hollis and Mike Posey. And they were like a Southern indie tag team that didn't really do Southern indies. Whenever Ring of Honor, like Sinclair era Ring of Honor would run the South, they would always use them. They were a big PWX tag team, which was that indie promotion that High Spots ran.
Yeah, outside of Charlotte. I know PWX pretty intimate. Yeah.
Always thought they were going to break out. They were just kind of, you know, they were almost like a wrong place, wrong time. Because that's a team you could put on TV as Jobber to the Stars type guys.
Right.
And I think they would kill it. But there wasn't really the environment for that at the time. And so they never went anywhere because Ring of Honor never pushed them. And they never really got a shot in Evolve, and PWX waned in relevancy. But, you know,
Hollis came around a decade early to be a Carolinas wrestler, I felt like.
And, you know, I remember this team. I mean, this is an undercard Ring of Honor tag team from a decade ago, and I still think those guys should have been a bigger deal.
Yeah, I also remember Hollis and John Skyler.
Yeah.
Yeah, like those were the parts of the Carolina Indies that people should have really glommed on to, not like CWF and Mid-Atlantic. You knew I was going to bring that up if we were going this direction.
It's funny. I saw a friend of the show, Chad Campbell, tweeting about CWF Mid-Atlantic a few days ago. And I was like, oh, yeah, that did exist, didn't it? Like
it was 5 minutes away from me when I went to undergrad.
Yeah, we never bothered. We all watched a 100-minute Trevor Lee match, didn't we? We all fell for it.
Some of y'all did. I fell asleep 10 minutes on.
It was
the last wrestling match that actually put me to sleep, guys. Put me to sleep.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. It was not something. I mean, look, I watched it. I was into it because at that point I had all the time in the world to watch everything. But the way some people talked about that, it's hard to explain if you weren't there. This indie promotion that was selling 100 tickets a show, for some people, had this gravitational pull that is just impossible to explain.
Yeah, and I think really what needs to be learned and taken from it was, okay, they were on Twitch for free. And they were the first ones to really kind of do that.
Oh, I don't even remember that. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I remember them always being like freely accessible. And that's when I was kind of going like, oh, I always kind of raise my eyebrow about when people really pimp those kinds of promotions. It started with me of CWF Mid-Atlantic going, oh, they're liars. They're liars.
All righty. Do you want to talk about Minorita, Mike?
Yes. Oh, or Hayakawa.
That's right. Takumi Hayakawa, Mini Skywalker.
Mini Skywalker. So, big story coming out of this last week. For the remainder of the program, we'll talk about the Cork win from August 1st as well. Coming up on Monday, Dangerous Gate in Yokohama Budokan. But in the way that things kind of do, we all had our eyebrow raised when this match was made, even before Kobe World, Kota Minora versus Minorita for this August 8th Korakuen. Minorita versus Kota Minora. Kota Minora pins Minorita after about 10 minutes with a golden rose. It was not a easy win for Minora, but not necessarily one where Rita was actually in. It was pulling the momentum on his side. But really the news from this match was the post-match, as Z-Bratz came out and with a Skywalker match mask, they knocked away all of Gold Class. They abducted Minorita in the middle of the ring, put on the Skywalker mask, and he became Mini Skywalker. They almost managed to get him back to Gold Class, but by the end of the segment and into right now, as we were talking about Twitter Spaces earlier, Minorita is no more. He has been replaced by Mini Skywalker. And after the main event of the show on the 1st, we had announced an all-out war for Dangerous Gate. Minorita contra Mini Skywalker, Gold Class versus Z-Bratz, Kota Minora, Benkei, BB Hulk, Mochizuki Jr. versus Skywalker Kai, Ishin, and Jason Lee.
If all of that sounded bad, it wasn't. It was highly entertaining. It was vintage Dragon Gate. And I think we've now been presented with a match at Dangerous Gate that could really go in either direction. And I want to kind of run through the possible scenarios we have here. But I'm curious, just heading into this show, which we'll do a full preview of at the end of this episode. We obviously have plenty more from Cork and Hall to talk about, even if it wasn't the most noteworthy Cork and Hall show in history. But Mike, where do you want this to go? Because there's a million different avenues. What is your hope coming out of Dangerous Gate?
I think Mini Skywalker, he should play in that space for a little bit before whatever he will be coming out of it. It's a situation of Hayakawa that, like, we've seen how great he has been, and at least is playing Minora's mascot, doing Skywalker's mascot as like this going for the custody of this mascot character. I think it's great. I love it, actually. I do think that what I really want to see is just like a couple month run, like into whatever. Because look, you have Jason Lee and you have Shun Skywalker. They've been wearing purple all the time. We're getting a refresh or a rebrand or something. I want to see Mini Skywalker go into that for a couple months before, you know, he breaks free and does his next thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's where the... Well, I guess I shouldn't say I'm with you. I hear you. I'm at a point now where I'm fighting against, I guess, Japanese tradition where you turn some people heel so that you can cheer them later on. And I have certain reservations that we can get into with this match, because I'm at a point now where I really want to cheer for Minorita. And in a related note, I really want to cheer for Mochizuki Jr. And I'm afraid that we could leave Dangerous Gate with one of those men as a heel, if not both of those men as a heel. And I'm not really interested in that right now. These are two guys that, you know, speaking from a pure fan lens, have really earned my respect. I think they've developed a phenomenal reputation. And for as entertaining as Minnie Skywalker is, and I'm not saying that we have to abandon this completely, because there's obviously great fun to be had with the Minnie bodysuit and the Minnie mask and, you know, Minnie Skywalker moves. I get it. I like that idea. But I hope sooner rather than later we're cheering for Takumi Hayakawa and not Minnie Skywalker.
I did not really come out of this expecting a junior heel turn. What led you to think that could be on the table?
So let me go through the possible scenarios here of what we could get. I ranked these in terms of what I would like to see the most compared to what I would like to see the least. Junior is at the tail end of this, so if Junior feels out of place now, I will explain as we get there. What I want to see the most, and this is coming out of Dangerous Gate, whether it happens at that show specifically or maybe the September Corkin, I don't know. But what I would like to see the most is still a Coach Minora heel turn and a Minorita face turn, because I'm going to note Minorita as a heel going forward. So Coach Minora turns heel, Minorita turns face. I still think that is the most interesting option of any of these. You also have the option of Coach Minora turning heel and Minorita staying heel, and both of those guys being in the heel unit, whether it's Zebrats or something else, is yet to be seen. I think that would be very interesting. A Minora face turn and a Minorita heel turn. So I guess at this point, they're staying where they are now. I don't love that. I don't think, and I'll have you weigh in here, I don't think the character of Kota Minora as it stands today is strong enough to stand on its own without the aided help and the aided charisma of Minorita. And I think Dragon Gate might be thinking, okay, we're really going to turn the dial up on Minora. This is going to be his run. He can't have a goofy sidekick. I think that is ill thought out. I think Minorita is still the stronger of the two in that pairing. And I think there's a real chance Minora could fall flat on his face if he stays as a babyface and Minorita stays as a heel.
Yeah, if it's a status quo that happens, and especially if it's Kota Minora just going like, well, I lost Minorita, now I guess I'm back to normal, I don't feel like that's earned whatsoever. And I don't feel like that will be enough of a change really to progress him into that next stage. Because like, what has he learned out of this? Or like, what has he grown from when as he's gone through this rookie kind of de-elevation, you know, like doing the openers? This match was match 3, which was a big point of kind of contention for Minorita. But I feel like if you kind of keep it status quo, other than, okay, you get to see like Minnie Skywalker solves a big problem with the heel unit. It does. But keeping Kota Minora as is, we still need that change, and we still need something about him to change, if it is the heel turn or some sort of character change. Because if we keep on the same path, I mean, at a certain point, like, you're just kind of running up against a wall, a brick wall. The brick wall is going to win out, and that nothing's going to change if you keep on running up against the brick wall the same way. Right.
Which leads me to what I think is the least desirable of any of the scenarios, which is that everything goes back to normal here, and that Hayakawa comes out back as Minorita, or even as Takumi Hayakawa, but just in gold class. He shakes from the spell of Shun Skywalker, but then Kota Minora also stays in gold class. I know it is natural for us to lean towards saying, shake it up, move some things around, unit displacement. But this now feels like a really strong demarcation point where you can't return to what was, and that whether it is, again, Minorita staying heel, whether it is Minora turning heel, which I still think is the most interesting option, you can't just do this angle and then wipe your hands of it. In September, we have Hulk and Minora and Minorita in an opening trios match. You know, that's not going to be any good. And I could see them also doing that, which, again, I think is the most boring of any routes possible. And it could lead to, you know, more catastrophe with Coach Minora. I'm not sure that I trust him as just a bland babyface, which is what he is right now.
And is he actually a babyface, though, in this character? Like, he's dropped all of the fan service pretense. He never has been known as the most charismatic guy. Like, he's just kind of just neutral, I would say.
He's neutral, but he's directly opposed against the obvious heel unit. So he's de facto babyface, but that doesn't mean that he's a good one.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I guess, like, for me, and like with this angle and with the crowd response, the crowd was into the entire portion of it, especially like to the point of Gold Class almost escapes to the back and then Z-Bratz attacks him and the crowd starts shrieking. You can't go back on that kind of emotion, because that's when you get into when you betray a fan base in a way, I feel like. Because there was genuine screams and wails when Z-Bratz pulled him away. Like, you can't, the status quo is not a return state, because you've kind of crossed that Rubicon, at least with the characters. Like, there has to be some sort of differentiation.
This was a great angle. This was the kind of thing that, you know, if you're Dragon Gate, you can put your hands on the back of your head and look at any other promotion in the world and go, all right, you guys do this, because anywhere else it would be completely absurd. And, you know, I think for people on the level of fandom that you and I are, you know, this is certainly what I gravitate to, is not Dragon Gate being good for the sake of being good, but Dragon Gate being good in a way that only they can. And this is certainly them being good in only a way that they can. This was a great angle. I'm concerned about the follow-up, because I think there's such a high ceiling, but I also think there's such a low floor. And normally I would give the promotion the benefit of the doubt and trust, you know, whatever the next step is, but it involves Coach Minora. And that, as we have learned, that is a dangerous game, and it is really impossible to tell where they're going to go from here.
Right. And I think it's worth noting that coming out of this Corraquin, we do have the full card. We'll talk about that there. You put together two championship matches that have outsiders involved, and having outsiders that I would say probably by and large are not appealing to the people that would buy into this angle as much. You know, so in a way, like, you have some vegetables you had to eat because you're in Yokohama and you're like, okay, we're going to bring in Junta Miyawaki and Kirishio, Tokyo, Japan. You don't like that, but hey, you're getting an all-out war in this angle happening for you guys, for like the true believers. It's all right. We're doing this too, to take care of y'all. And I think that was a pretty smart and a little bit of a deft maneuver of booking to do that on the same show.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that. You know, the outsiders, the Juta thing, I don't read into too much. Until I hear otherwise, I'm fully of the belief that the Juta thing is a rare instance of Ultimo calling a shot and showing loyalty to a guy that was very loyal to him in Mexico. And I think this is, you know, whether you want to believe this is what they get for Monte doing the N1, or again, I think it's just Ultimo saying, hey, you know who we should give a shot to? Junta Miyawaki. He looked good on that Buyuden show. I don't know what it is. That one doesn't faze me. The Jiro thing is a little peculiar, and as, you know, somebody as locked in as I am, I don't necessarily want to see that in my Dragon Gate, so you're right. This is a fine substitute. I'm going to sit through a Twin Gate match that might be a level below what it should be, but at least I get this.
Yeah, and at least, like, in a way to touch on Dangerous Gate for a second, I get why you bring in Jiro. Like, or at the very least, being like, maybe he brings, like, the people in there for it in that way. I just, the show needed to have a match like this put on and a angle to set up a match like this, I felt like, for this Corraquin, because, I mean, my written review up on Voices of Wrestling, it was a fun show. I will say that. And a lot of my enjoyment of that comes out of this angle, which I felt like was one of those Dragon Gate angles. As you said, like, it's you watch Dragon Gate to watch the things that only Dragon Gate could.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that I think is worth noting just before we move on, and actually it can sort of dovetail into the main event of this show, is Z-Bratz are back cooking in a real way. And we've gone through some time periods where, you know, you've had injuries and excursions that have hurt the numbers of bodies in this unit. And you obviously still have Kato out and Valletta, you know, TBD on if he'll return or not. I really hope so. I'd like to see him for at least one more tour. But think about how interesting it is. You have this main event in Corkin against D-Courage. You have this gold class match at Dangerous Gate that has an actual build to it and feels really hot. Feels like the hottest thing on the show because it's the thing they could build most to on this Corkin. And you couldn't do a ton with Yamato and Kakuta. They did a ton with Zebrats and Gold Class here. You have the ongoing issue of Zebrats and Natural Vibes. I'm sure at some point the issue between Zebrats and Big Hug is going to heat up. And then you have Zebrats and Paradox, who don't really feel like they're existing in the same universe right now. But Zebrats have become such a strong heel unit again, because they've sort of ebbed and flowed throughout their 2.5 year existence at this point, that any Zebrats main event that has any sort of gross word to use in the context of contemporary wrestling, but any Zebrats main event that has a story built into it is going to feel really hot, because whether it's Ishin or Jason or Shun or perhaps even Mini Skywalker, like, this unit's really clicking right now. This unit is doing really good things, and I just think that's worth noting, especially in the context of talking about what's to come with Gold Class, but now also talking about what they did with D-Courage.
Yeah, and I think with Zebrats, and especially as like it relates to like this main event, and the idea of Zebrats being such a now like a heavy presence on the show, when they have that core four in a match together, it raises the stakes. Well, like, because you always would, at least for the last few months, you had Kai and Ishin off on their own kind of thing, and you had Shun and Jason do their thing. So the fact that you have all four of them both here in this Corquin main event against D-Courage and Ryusuke Taguchi, as well as that's the Zebrats match at Dangerous Gate, I think it just like it pulls focus and kind of in a way kind of raises the stakes, because they're all there. And I feel like that there is something about a heel unit that when it is on all cylinders, like, you think, I saw across my timeline like a Kaientai Deluxe match from Michinoku Pro, and it's like, oh yeah, it's all 10 of them. Like, you have to, if you have the entire Kaientai Deluxe, including Shiryu and Mensteo, but if you have all of them together, it changes it. And I feel like that was something that really adds to the stakes. And I think that was an aspect of Zebrats we got to see in this main event, with Zebrats versus D-Courage, Madoka Kakuta, Dragon Daya, Ryoya Tanaka, with the pinch-hitting Ryusuke Taguchi of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Zebrats wins a surprisingly clean affair, a scrapbuster Jinchu on Tanaka from Ishin to get the win in about 20 minutes. But we had Taguchi kind of come and play, but really, as you were saying, Case, this was a Zebrats match more so than anything.
Yeah, I wanted this to be better than it was. I had an idea of Taguchi in my head that just didn't come into fruition. A more serious Taguchi, not that I was expecting him to be Toshiaki Kawada, but I thought he would have assimilated just a little bit better into this environment than he did. It was a good match. You know, I have seen many a Taguchi matches throughout my years that have been train wrecks, you know, that have not landed with what they're going for. The concept is a failure. The execution is a failure. This was not that. This was a perfectly fine match. It was a step down from your usual Dragon Gate Corkin, and a major step down from what would have been had Yoshioka been in this match. I get it. It certainly felt big. I don't know, to you, did Taguchi come across like a big star? Because he did to me.
Yeah, enough so that I almost pulled up YouTube to play his theme music as he came out. Just because, like, I was like, oh, the crowd's actually really into it. And that was a thing that kind of sucked on the show, was losing that ability to kind of read off of that. But I as I wrote, like, this was collectively, like if we put our brains together, Case, this is what we were going to get. Like, a whole lot of Madoka Kakuta Fezation, you know, and Taguchi, and then, you know, it was going to end with Ishin, the heel that's getting a little bit of a push, pinning the rookie, you know, but it just never really got out of just doing exactly what you expected it to be.
No, I thought the star of the match was Tanaka, which I guess is becoming a reoccurring theme. He's kind of becoming a super worker in Corkin when he's given the chance. And, you know, I don't know if I had to take somebody's year, would I rather have Daya's year, Super Juniors included, or Tanaka's year? I've been far more entertained by Tanaka this year. That's not really a slight on Daya because I think he's been good, but Tanaka's a thrilling wrestler. And I still think even within the bubble that we exist in, you know, he's heavily underrated, and I'm hoping he turns heads at Dangerous Gate. And as we head into Dangerous Gate, where fingers crossed we get a King of Gate lineup and announcement, I'm really hoping Tanaka's in King of Gate. You know, if it's single elimination, he'll be bounced in the first round, whatever. But if it's block play, he could have a chance for four or five really, really interesting matches. And I think he's ready. He's not ready to win. He's not ready to be pushed. But I think he's ready to have great matches with just about anybody on the roster.
Yeah, and I feel like a match like this really kind of puts the focus onto him, because you were going to have him kind of eat a whole lot of offense and really do the work here. And he's getting a payoff for that almost immediately. I mean, he's facing KZ at Dangerous Gate, as you kind of alluded to. That's going to be a big highlight for him. I just think that for D Courage right now, bringing in Taguchi and having this kind of be the payoff of everything, it kind of worked out in a way where, like, we're still not a definite date back for Yuki Yoshioka, but probably sometime this fall we'll be getting news that he is returning, or more likely than not, him being like a shock return, or like getting into the ring and saying like, all right, and I'm back, basically. And I feel like that it kind of, in a way, that this entire Best of the Super Junior experience for Daya, coinciding with Tanaka kind of crystallizing into form, I guess in a wild way, D Courage feels a little bit more relevant and maybe more hot than they have since. I mean, I feel like that since they were Twin Gate champions last year, maybe.
Like, maybe. I don't know. The problem with them is that even if they're more relevant, they're still the least relevant unit in the company, because I think Vibes on a whole is just more consistent, more entertaining than they are. Paradox, I'm morbidly intrigued by, way more so when Doi's around, but even when Doi's not, you know, I as we discussed heavily last week, I'm into the Yamato right now. I'm into what he's doing. I just said what I said about Zebrats. In Gold Class, you have this great mystery up in the air. So the problem with D Courage is, again, it's nothing specifically that they're doing. It's that the competition against them is just so strong. And so that's why, you know, I think the Kakuta Yamato match doesn't feel as hot as it could. Now, again, you're also, again, dealing with issues with build there. It's why Daya maybe isn't as exciting as he seems to be this year than in years previous, where I've been way higher on him as an overall wrestler than I am this year. But it's why Tanaka continues to jump out at me, because Tanaka is still new and exciting. He's been in this unit less than a year. And the rest of D Courage, it's good. It's good, but we know it's good. We know what they are. And I think Big Hug has replaced them in the pecking order. I think Big Hug is currently doing D Courage better than D Courage is doing D Courage. And I'm kind of hoping for all of these guys that there's a pivot soon, even though it seems like they're in a holding pattern waiting for Yoshioka to come back.
I guess for me, at least with this show, and I think that it also goes back to kind of Kobe World, I feel like at least popularity pecking order, Hyo and Daya have kind of flipped over the recent weeks. And I do kind of feel like that the momentum that Hyo kind of had or has had, like, it just feels like that Hyo is pulling back, but it feels like that Daya right now, and it might just be because you had Best of the Super Juniors where you say like, hey, he's back and he gets the Brave Gate against the popular guy right now. But I do feel like that D Courage is kind of a little adrift, but with everything with Daya kind of becoming more and more relevant and Tanaka, it does kind of feel like that we are kind of looking towards Yoshioka. And
yeah, I mean, look, Daya helps. He feels like a bigger deal than Kakuta does, which is not what you want coming into Dangerous Gate.
Yeah, Kakuta is, and it's like a wild thing with the promos with him and Yamato, too, where like Yamato is kind of deferential to him after Kobe World, which I don't know if that's what I would do with that.
I don't know. It's a tough position to be in where you scheduled things the way that you did with Dangerous Gate being this early and Kobe being as late as it was. I look through the roster and it's like, you know, you don't want to do Yamato versus Mochizuki because that does seem counterintuitive to what you're doing with the Reiwa generation. I guess the story there is just built in that it's, hey, you know, it's Yamato versus a young guy. We've been talking about this for a year and a half now. Boom, here you go. Here's the match. I do wonder if they would have been better served, again, going with Kai, where there's a more built-in story there, or going with Shun and blowing the lid off of this reign very early on, or even going with KZ and revisiting the Yamato and KZ history, because this is a tough spot to be in. These guys have no history with each other. Their only real historical anecdote is they teamed together when Shingo came back at Final Gate. They've never had a singles match, and it's really hard to get excited for something that was sort of thrust into thin air.
Yeah, and maybe it is the scenario that Kakuta is the person that at least out of the Reiwa generation can take that fall and it'll be okay because you're going to heat him up sometime down the line.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I said this in 30 under 30. Don't worry about Kakuta. Does he need to deliver in that match? He absolutely does. But I'm not worried about him delivering, and I'm not worried about his long-term prospects. Again, you almost have to put this match in terms of the scope of Kakuta's career with an asterisk next to it because of everything I just said about D-Courage. This is not going to be the character-defining Madoka Kakuta Dreamgate Challenge. Now, it could be an amazing match, and it could be a career-defining match in terms of quality, in terms of greatness, but this isn't peak Madoka Kakuta. This isn't the Kakuta that we're always going to remember. This is a fork in the road defense for Yamato. I'm sorry, not a fork in the road defense, but just, you know, a V1, move on from here, Yamato defense. As long as Kakuta brings in his half of the bargain, this doesn't matter towards Kakuta's trajectory or his career or his character. This match is far more about Yamato than it is Kakuta.
Yep. No, I think that's entirely fair with that. Elsewhere on this main event, the Gold Class came out afterwards to set up the all-out war with Z-Bratz afterwards. I just, like, Tanaka and Ishin really the might be the best chemistry on the roster at times, I feel like, with the finish, at least here.
I could see that, yeah.
At least that was kind of a little bit of a takeaway. I was 3.25 on this. Where did you have the main event?
3.5.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. And what did you have on Minoru versus Minorita?
I had 3.25.
All right. Should we just work our way back down the card, or is there?
Let's go to the semi-main because I have a big picture question for you. We can work from main event on down.
Absolutely. So we were talking about Yamato and Kakuta headlining Dangerous Gate. Yamato was in the semi-main event of the Korakuen show. Big Hug Hyo and Jackie Kamei defeat Paradox, Yamato, and Susumu Yokosuka. Hyo caught Susumu with the Samson driver for the win with Big Hug here. This was my match of the night. I mean, this was the one that I was just a shade away from going 4 on, but I thought that this I really enjoyed it. And I mean, it was a lot of it was Yamato with Jackie Kamei.
I do get the impression that in the same way that I have a hunch that Ultimo really enjoys wrestling UT, just because of some of the treatment that UT has been given in a favorable way from Ultimo over the last few years, I do get the impression that Yamato really enjoys working with Jackie Kamei. That is, I do feel that same way.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the way that they are, that Kamei sells like the chop battles and like that. Like it is something with Yamato. You kind of see a little bit of a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, very much so. What was the, I sent you that article today. If you go to the Gaiora website.
Oh, Sky Perfect.
Yeah, there's a big Sky Perfect interview with Yamato, and I'll read this. This is machine translation. I'm sure we're missing details and context here, but Sky Perfect asked Yamato sort of just about the context of wrestlers growing within Dragon Gate, and they say, for example, the organization is able to determine to some extent what a person's future will be when they join. And Yamato says, there's nothing in particular. For example, there's Jackie Kame. He was a gloomy character, but from the second half of last year to the first half of this year, he was definitely the central figure. In other organizations, the ring, which I'm assuming means the promotion, would never revolve around Kame. We didn't think he would go that far. There are a lot of people like that around now. Also, I think they're good at using the veterans so that they can make things easier for themselves, and then Yamato laughs. So he himself is saying that Kame has already far exceeded expectations from where they thought he would be when he debuted.
Yeah, it a real kind of fun interview, I feel like, from Yamato, because he's also talking about just like how old he is and about 10 years, because he apparently did an interview with him in 2014 as the Almighty. And it's just very much like we are at this time where Yamato at this point is just going to just kind of shoot from the hip at this point.
Well, like, it's a victory lap, you know. Mm-hmm. Yamato feels very confident, it feels, which is why I'm so into him right now and what he's doing. And I'm into the idea of a boastful and proud Yamato. You know, we did not get that in Tribe Vanguard. We did not get that in Team Drangy. We did not get that in High End. Even though we've seen babyface Dreamgate champion Yamato before, this is a new wrinkle on it. And it's one that, again, I would recommend, even with the machine translation, it seems to come out relatively clean, checking out that Sky Perfect interview.
Yeah, especially considering the market of which Yamato felt like they should be targeting instead.
Yes, very much so. Let me ask you a question about the semi-main. Are we voting Hyo for most improved this year?
I feel like work rate-wise, you kind of have to, just because it would either be him or Tanaka, because if you're talking about where they were at least at the start of the year and where they are now, I feel like Hyo... I would say by about 2021, you wouldn't get very many bad Hyo matches, but there wouldn't necessarily be exceptional ones. But I would say that he's done his best in-ring work, at least in Big Hug, I would say. Yeah.
Paul in the Discord mentioned that today in the Observer Awards section, and I have spent zero time thinking about that. But I read that today, and I thought, well... I can't think of anybody else off the bat. Now, granted, I'm super behind on the G1. I'm actually watching it as we speak. And maybe if one of the young, quote-unquote, New Japan stars really blows me away, you know, if I like what Uemura is doing at the tournament, then okay, maybe I can see that argument there. But Hyo feels like the right answer this year, because it's a little Tokyo Sports-ish, where... There's got to be an award to give a Dragon Gate guy. You just don't know what it is. And Hyo feels right for most improved this year. Like, you have to recognize Hyo's year with some sort of award. And most improved seems to fit more than anything else.
Yeah. If I'm thinking 2024, maybe Queen Aminata is the...
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I feel like she would be a strong other candidate. Yeah, I don't know New Japan-wise. Because I think Yuya Uemura would be that, but I just like his style doesn't necessarily excite me, even though he's very good at it, you know, or he's gotten better at it.
I mean, look, it's enjoyable watching him wrestle Takeshita. The test for me and him will be when he's not wrestling Takeshita, but I have not gotten that far in the G1 yet. I'm picking and choosing, and I'm on day four as we speak, and only watching this match from day four, because I don't have it in me to watch David Finlay versus Hanare or El Phantasmo, who I like more than most, versus Yota Tsuji. That's just not happening.
Yeah. El Phantasmo in this tournament. Yeah.
No good.
I just don't have a use for him.
Okay. It does feel like I really liked him at one point, and I'm okay with selling my stock. I'll check out a few of his matches, but I don't know. I shouldn't be like this, because I get annoyed when people that only parachute in to watch Dragon Gate are like, I don't know, these just aren't the guys that I grew up with, because that's lazy analysis. But I'm looking at some of these G1 lineups and I'm thinking like, man, this isn't my G1. No Ishii, no Okada. I don't know about this.
Yeah, I guess like for me in the G1, it's just like, if I wanted to watch like a 20-person tournament of very good matches, I would probably go and do that. But if I'm watching the G1, I expect it to be the G1 climax.
Yes.
And that's what's missing.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at some of these cards. They don't excite me, but I heard today's Corkin show was great. There's some Shingo stuff I want to check out. And, you know, I think we've all kind of accepted the position that I've long held, which is that Tetsuya Naito is not a very good pro wrestler.
I mean, he's this will surprise you, but the story of the tournament is that can Naito hit the Destino?
God, that really sounds terrible. I don't know. It's always my thing with Naito. It's just like, even at his peak, even when he had all those Kenny Omega matches and he had all those Ibushi matches and he had those Okada matches, I've never left a great Naito match going, God, Naito was great in that match. It's always the other guy. And Naito's there.
No. I think about since it's not that like he had like an insane match with Tsuji, you know?
Yeah.
But this is the time he should be having those kinds of.
Very much so. Very much so. Okay, I think I'm voting Hyo most improved this year, and that's all I have to say on that match.
Yeah, I mean,
it was very good. I went 3.5 on it. It was fun.
I thought it was a whole lot of fun, and I think the more Yamato and Jackie Kamei we can get, the better. Working our way back, we had Luis Monte defeat Big Boss Shimizu in his N1 victory send-off match. It was a battle of heavyweights. Win with a Desperation Super Tigre Rana hold after the match, and this was the go-to intermission match. Ryo Saito brought out Hamari Kato, announced that his debut will be on the September 5th Korakuen, and there was a Hamari chant that broke out. And then afterwards, the two other members, Kato, Sahara, and I do not have the tweet with the other one. The only one who did not pass their test immediately was Oshima, right?
Yes, that is correct. I don't see the tweet with the three of them now, because yeah, there should be four, but I think one of them was late to join. Did we get official word that one of the four failed their test and is done?
No, I thought I saw someone tweet a Ryo Saito with three of them.
I thought I did too. Let me look through the Discord, because I know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Because Oshima was the one that was left out. I know that.
That
for
was
sure.
An older. Okay. That was an older tweet. Was from October, and Oshima started working future matches in the spring. So he might have joined later than the rest of those kids.
Yeah. He might not be up for it.
Yeah. Yeah, Sahara is the one that I like. Sahara is the giant one, 90 kilograms. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Kato super handsome. I'm looking forward to that. Look, you know me. I love a good rookie, but I'm waiting for Akira Akihiro Sahara from Kobe, 90 kilograms to debut. That's gonna be my guy.
Yeah, Sahara is the big one. Tsujiguchi was the one I was leaving out. Yeah, I have not seen Tsujiguchi in a while though. I think Tsujiguchi was Max Z during like the fake Max Z character.
He was, yes.
Yeah. But Hamare, I feel like at least other than, you know, Kato defeating people in exhibition matches, Hamare getting that response was probably one of the louder rookie announcements in a long time.
I agree. I like the way they did it, you know, not positioning it before the show, but after a hot match, a match that I liked way more than you, which we'll talk about here momentarily, it was just a nice little moment. You know, I'm already rooting for the kid. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. So I was 3.25 on this. I thought this was a fun pre and intermission car wreck. Where were you at? And sell me on it being better, much better than what I thought it was.
Yeah, it was a 4. I mean, I thought this match
really
just kicked ass.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, but it was also, I think perhaps I fell in love with the idea of the match as much as I did the match itself, because I'm watching Monte get his ass kicked by, you know, Dragon Gate's most active heavyweight in preparation for the N1. And I'm just like, yeah, this is a great booking. This is good stuff. This is exactly what they should have done. It makes Monte look tough to the Dragon Gate audience. It makes Monte look tough to the Noah audience. And by the goddamn way, I have no new talking point on this other than, my God, is Shimizu underrated. I any promotion in the world should kill to get this guy on their roster.
Yeah, I think for me, it was the fact that it felt like the send-off match, that I couldn't get past it, but it was fun. I mean, the fact that they were basically playing off who can get the power bomb, and they were countering their way out of it. It is a wild thing that, like, we are so far beyond this that when Jay and Ho-Ho brought up Bokudomo Dragon, I was like, oh, yeah, that was definitely a mask feud that went on.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, what they've done with Shimizu is just, it's so impressive. And I think, like, I know last year going into the Gate of Destiny, and even the year before that going into Champion Gate when he wrestled Kai for the Dream Gate, and then obviously last year Kakuta, I'm sure during the previews to both matches, I was like, well, this is going to be the peak of Shimizu. You know, this will be his last Dreamgate match. And I watched him here and just thought, man, this guy should have a 3-month Dreamgate run. Like, this guy's actually too good to go his entire career without holding the Dreamgate championship. And I don't know what context it would ever make sense to get him the Dreamgate belt. But my God, is this guy good. He is just such a special wrestler.
Yeah, and I feel like where he is now, and I feel like it's not even like a statement on vibes, but right now the fact that you could put Shimizu in a special singles match with like half of the roster, I'm like, okay, let's see what's gonna happen there. Like, Big Boss Shimizu versus Daiki Yanagiuchi, I'm into it.
Yep, I'm into it. There's a million things you can do with him. You know, I thought last year his match with Shun was so good, because it was kind of two guys going out there that are oftentimes, we know how great they are, but they're in a position where they can't fully show how great they are. And then you put them in a singles match and you go, oh, that's right. This is how they are. And Shimizu in particular is in such an interesting spot because he's got no one to turn to. You know, his closest generational peer at this point is UT. You know, he would have been in that generation with T-Hawk and with Eita, and with Hayashi, Lindemann, not Yuga Hayashi, good Lord, L. Lindemann, and they're all gone. You know, he has no real contemporaries outside of UT, and you see them team, but it's not like they'll ever have a great generational rivalry. And that was what they, you know, the story they told going into November of last year with the Dreamgate match. And I think there's a real argument to be made that Shimizu deserves a little bit more than what he's got now.
Yeah, and especially given the fact that the focus has gone on to, like, not that he has been skipped, but like that Reiwa 6 and being able to have all those rivalries, that's going to be kind of the bread and butter in theory of the promotion in the next 5 to 10. He still, I mean, Shimizu is not even 36, I think. He's not that old. That is the surprising thing to me, is that he's in kind of like this adrift thing. So he is 31. Big Boss Shimizu is only 31. Yeah, I knew he was a lot younger than we thought. And I think that's also the issue with like the generational peers, because even though it would be like your Lindemann and your T-Hawks and your Eitas, in a weird way, he feels like he is younger than them, but he is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But, and I feel like that is a scenario where he kind of like the fact that he doesn't have a generational peer, that the fact that he is a heavyweight makes up for it in some ways, because you can have matches like this Luis Monte match and it feels like it has a bit more heft to it. Whereas if he was, you know, I mean, he's announced and listed at basically 110 kilos. If he was announced at like 80 or 90 kilos, I don't think that it works that way for him. I think the fact that he's like true heavyweight, it provides him just a little bit of a way to get over the lack of generational peers.
I know the timeline doesn't entirely match up, but you do have to wonder if in 2017... they try to make something of Shimizu as a heel instead of that second T-Hawk run that didn't go anywhere, and just how things would be different. Because 2016, King of Gate, it comes down to Yamato and Shimizu, which is one of my favorite Yamato matches, and it's one of my favorite Shimizu matches. And 2016, I thought Shimizu was a top 10 wrestler in the world, and 2016 was a glorious year of pro wrestling, and I thought Shimizu was right up there with just about everybody else. And if you turn him heel and do Yamato and Shimizu at World a year after that King of Gate finals, I think that's a really interesting scenario.
No, it's interesting with him, and I feel like that him being kind of this adrift figure kind of makes him interesting in that level. Because,
oh yeah. Oh my God. I mean, if he, you know, I didn't really do this with Yamato because he's won 6 Dreamgate belts, but I've found myself ever since the Eita title win, I really like doing basically an article within my written review whenever there's a new Dreamgate champion and telling the story of their career. And if Shimizu were ever to win a Dreamgate belt, what a fascinating career. That guy has a story to tell. I really hope it happens one day. And I don't know the context of it, when it would make sense, whether he'd be a face or a heel, what it would be. But man, I'd really like to see that.
And I feel like, in a way, if he does it, he kind of, go with me on this, he has that Tozawa kind of role of finally reaching it, that he gets there before KZ.
Oh, that's fantastic. God, I want to see Shimizu and KZ in a singles match.
Yeah, that would be a great King of Gate match coming up.
Oh, man. All right. Let's rock and roll. What's next?
So, working our way back, Case, this is when we got to talk about Jiro as Aganisu versus Peridos, Misaki Mochizuki, Toru Washi, Shuji Kondo defeat Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, and Kagetora. Kondo reverses a Doi Bowl to pin his biggest rival from the Toriumon era, Dragon Kid. That gives him the immediate claim for a Twin Gate match. You would think, oh, Awashi and Kondo, that would be a great Twin Gate match. Or even Kondo and Mochizuki, that sounds great for Yokohama. Instead, we get his former Wrestle 1 compatriot, Kirishiro Tokyo, Japan, who has always wanted to make an appearance in Dragon Gate, but he will be the other challenger for Not Hug in Yokohama. So Naruki Doi and Dragon Kid making their defense against Shuji Kondo and Kirishiro Tokyo, Japan.
Well, historically, and I note historically, I feel like I've been a little kinder to Jiro than others have. That being said, I have no interest in seeing him in this environment.
No, and you lose the fact that they're not going to pay for his theme music and they're going to mute it, so you don't even have like the crowd laughing at him getting out of the ring during his entrance. So you're kind of like left with why do you bring him in? And the idea is, I guess maybe he sell some tickets. I don't see that he's like that big of a name to actually bring people in for it. Like, that's the weird thing, is like, it's just like, oh, I mean, you could have gone in a lot of different ways with Kondo that would have been much more interesting than this.
Yeah, because I, you know, look, net positive Toru Washi, he's been there all year. I would have been very open to seeing an old guys Twin Gate match. The Jiro thing is tough because when Strong Hearts came into Wrestle 1, they were often opposite him, and I thought he did really well there. It's far and away the most I've ever enjoyed him. And this was around the time, and Mike, I'm sure you remember this, where we'd get these tweets of like, Tokyo Sports fan poll, who are the most popular 10 wrestlers in Japan? And it's Okada, Tanahashi, Ibushi. And then number 10 would be Jiro. And we'd all go like, wait, what the fuck is this? And so it felt like for a minute there was real momentum where like, I wanted to see Shima versus Jiro. And they did T-Hawk versus Jiro. And it was pretty good. And I thought like, oh, well, if he exists as like the permanent babyface against Strong Hearts, that's a pretty interesting dichotomy there. I like that. The problem is that it's 5 years later. By all accounts, he's more annoying. Very, very rarely do I make the choice to watch him because he's in All Japan and I don't watch full All Japan shows. And he's in there with three guys that I really like, and I feel like if it was anybody else in his spot, this match would be a million times better and way more exciting on paper.
Yeah. I think like those Tokyo Sports polls, he did a lot of crossover media at one point. Like,
yeah, that's always been the vibe, is that the guy works his ass off, and right. he's perhaps more recognizable than he is famous, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, absolutely. I just, like, since he's returned from WWE, and I mean, like, he's made a lot of great appearances. He's basically been him and Seigo Tachibana have been attached to the hip since he's come back. I just, like, maybe he sells tickets. Like, that's the only like justification for like how annoying the match is going to be now that I can justify it for. Because yeah, I'd rather have net positive Toru Awashi here. I mean, I don't need Takuya Sugawara in my Dragon Gate, but could have done that too.
I would have taken Yoshi here, because at least the dynamic of Kondo and Yoshi in and Dragon Kid, that's at least an interesting match. It might not be good, but it'd be interesting.
That's almost a T2P match.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just like the way those names line up on paper, because that's, you know, guys that have been around each other for 25 years but have never wrestled that exact match before, at least that I remember.
Yeah, and then you get like Itakon. Like, you have a lot of different things here. But yeah, I guess also I look at the rest of Dangerous Gate, and I maybe with how things are kind of positioned on the card, it's like, okay, he's not going to be like teaming with Masaaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji versus the Kung Fu Masters. You know, like, there's not a lot of other spots to really make it work. And unless you're like promoting Awashi straight up and just doing a one for one split or switch, it's that you don't necessarily have anything, I guess, super strong to put in there for his place, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a tough one, because I know in our bubble, it's only going to retract people. No one's going, oh my God, Jiro's on the Dragon Gate show? Man, Dragon Gate must be cooking right now. I think it's going to lead to a lot of takes that maybe aren't necessarily fair to the state of Dragon Gate, and maybe label of desperation on them that I don't think is entirely accurate. And it also is just going to take down the match, because I think Kondo has been very good this year. We've done the Doi Dragon Kid conversation, but they're going to have an anchor, you know, in that match. And it'll be a real testament to all involved if it ends up being something worthwhile.
No, I'm with you on that. Before that, we had Kota Minoura versus Minorita. We didn't actually talk a lot about the match itself. So,
I mean, Minorita is an excellent pro wrestler. And yeah. I really wasn't sure if he was going to be able to get that back post the injury he had. But you watch Minorita now, you would have no idea that he was out injured for a year with a leg injury.
And I mean, like, starts off with his corkscrew tornado dive and all of that. Like, it's not just that he's like wrestled his way back into shape. It's just like, this match, like, we got to see, like, oh yeah, no, the person who studies Minoura intently to imitate him understands his offense. We got to have that. Got a little tired of the Golden Rose hunting at a certain point. It did kind of at a certain point feel like Kota Minoura was like, well, I'm going for the Golden Rose, and that's what I'm doing here. And that's been an issue sometimes with his matches with me. And
I can see that. I feel like it was so intentional in this match that I was happy to ride the wave more so than fight against it.
Yeah, and they made it a real, that Rita made him work for it. He was able to turn one of the Golden Roses kind of into a headlock takeover, but not like the big one. And then eventually it took the jumping knee, R301, and then the Golden Rose to win. But I feel like that they did enough here to do the match and then leave a lot left in the tank.
Absolutely. No, it was fun. It was constructed like a really good TV match.
Yep, that's entirely fair. And then match two, Toriumon Kasa, Ultimo Dragon, La Estrella, and Junta Miyawaki from Pro Wrestling Noah defeat Punch Tominaga, Don Fuji, and Daiki Yanagiuchi. And this is where Junta made his Brave Gate challenge afterwards. But what did you think of the lovely work we got between Junta and Punch Tominaga?
Okay, so it's easy to analyze Junta's performance here because there were two different things happening. Anytime he was in the ring with Punch, it was very bad. Otherwise, it was fine. You know, I think he and Daya are going to have a very competent 3.25-star Brave Gate match. We're going to move on from it. It'll be forgettable. 3 years from now, we'll go, oh, remember when Junta worked a Brave Gate match? That was weird. Oh, and then Jiro stuck up the joint of the Twin Gate match? Oh, what a disappointment. We'll have that conversation 3 years from now. The chemistry with Punch was bad, but Punch has bad chemistry with a lot of different people. So I can't put that all on Junta, and I thought otherwise he looked fine.
Yeah, I did think he did like a pretty gnarly shoulder breaker that looked pretty good. Like, I think that it will be a perfectly competent match here. It the biggest issue we're going to have 3 years from now is that we'll be doing like five-star match game and Joe Gagne will have us like name Dreamgate or Bravegate challengers, and we're not going to remember the Bravegate challenger from Dangerous Gate 2024.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's absolutely a tough one.
And then we opened with Natural Vibes defeating Gold Class, Strong Machine J, KZ, and UT versus Benkei, BB Hulk, and Mochizuki Jr. UT getting the Fuego, which is a crucifix driver on Mochizuki Jr. for the win.
Kicked ass. Loved this. Loved this opener.
Yeah, SMJ and Jr. just rocking it. Eventually, one day, one of them is going to have to be the better second generation wrestler, and we're going to, and they're just going to try to murder each other until they decide that.
You're not on this panel, so you won't have to deal with it, but I'm already anticipating very hostile and passive aggressive emails in the Fighting Spirit 50 email thread that we're on when I advocate for Jr. to be a top 25 wrestler this year. And people that are actively against Dragon Gate being represented in the poll are not going to take very kindly to it. But I don't know. I feel like Junior just on a show-in, show-out basis is better than the overwhelming majority of pro wrestlers right now.
Yeah, and I love how it was this consumption of the feud with him and Strong Machine J that left his back open for UT, and that was really cool. It's like, oh, these are the things that make me love UT, because it's like, oh, you are just obsessed with going after Strong Machine J. That's okay. I'm going to go for Hikari no Wa on you right now, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, now I want to see UT and J in a singles match, or I'm sorry, UT and Junior in a singles match.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like those two have some pretty special chemistry there if they're given the opportunity. And yeah, I'm really into, like, this is kind of the rematch from Kobe World, at least. I mean, but I really thought this was a fun opener, and I would like to see more of this, or more of Gold Class versus Natural Vibes, because, or at least this pairing, because really it's felt like that they have a lot of chemistry that they could work with.
Yeah, I would assume. And we can transition into a Dangerous Gate preview here, as I have about 10 minutes before I have to go. So we'll have just enough time. But I would assume we're going to get Junior and Jay attached at the hip for the rest of the year. I mean, that doesn't feel done by any means.
No, and I feel like at least with where they are right now and the way that, you know, Junior has basically been betrayed by the other second generation wrestlers and by a lot of other wrestlers, like, you can go to this well. This is a well that, like, they should be, that this should be the generational peer for Mochizuki Jr., I feel like.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
So we talked about a bunch of this card. It is on Monday, Yokohama Budokan National Holiday for Japan. 8 matches on the card. We've already kind of talked about the main event, but Yamato versus Madoka Kakuta. I think both of us are pretty heavily towards Yamato, just key collecting here.
Yes, no, this is V1. This is Yamato getting a win. The result is not in question. It's really only a matter of how good this match is. And for the sake of Kakuta, you know, you hope he comes out there and kills it. It'll be interesting to see who works more dominant in this match. I would hope, given the way that Yamato has been speaking and presenting himself since he won the title, that this is a dominant Kakuta performance with Yamato fighting from underneath. To me, that is far more interesting than Yamato beating up the young guy and having Kakuta make a comeback and then lose in the end.
Yeah, and I think at the very least, like, the one kind of plot point that Yamato has made is that Kakuta is the one of the Reiwa generation that he really wanted to face. That he's the one that he feels like that presents him a real battle, because he's never faced Kakuta before. Because Kakuta's first real singles match was the Dreamgate match they got injured in. so like that you have a little bit of that I think it makes this match pretty intriguing, but that's more of the match itself than actually the result.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Ben build, where, you know, the sell on Kobe World was, hey, Yamato's been talking about this for a year now. Like, there's a built-in story here. even if there's not a ton that Yamato and Bing can do themselves to elevate this match. And Yamato Kakucha is the same way. It's the same story as the Bin match, just with a different guy challenging for the belt.
Semi-main event, open the Triangle Gate Championship match. We actually didn't have a whole lot on the Corkin show previewing this, but it's champion team, Natural Vibes, SMJ, UT, and Shimizu, defending against Luis Monte in from the N1 victory, Hyo and Jackie Kamei. When this match was made, we felt like that now this is kind of where you put goal, where you put Big Hug, and it feels pretty good for them there. I'm still thinking that this could be a pretty tough defense for Natural Vibes. Where are you coming down on that?
I hate to flip-flop on some opinions that I've stated pretty boldly in the past, but I like this Vibes team so much that I'd be very, very interested in them keeping the belts. The runway here, the red carpet is there for Big Hug to kill him, get the belts, have their run, whatever. But if Vibes wins, I will not be upset.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to see how Chapter 4 Vibes is much different from KZ era Vibes. And in order to see that, I guess that they remain Triangle Gate champions.
It would be very fun if that was the long-term story there, was if Jay challenged KZ's and the original Natural Vibes Trio's Triangle Gate defense record.
Would they go then KZ, Genki Horiguchi, Susumu Yokosuka as a challenger to stop that?
I don't think Genki has that left in him.
That would be fun.
I love a good unit callback. That's fine with me. I don't think Genki has the body to do that anymore.
Worth noting, we are going to be in Kunamoto coming up for Genki.
The Kunamoto show last year in October was one of the best shows they had all year. That was a very fun show.
I think the November one is the network one this year.
Okay, good.
Because he's doing a series of Kunamoto shows. Like, they're calling it the Genki Horiguchi Super Fight Series 2024.
I love that. Good for him. Yeah, that Kunamoto show last year that made the network, I remember, Sunday, November 17th. That looks like that's when they'll do that.
Right.
That show last year felt like the way that American TV wrestling should feel every single week. That was a compact and concise show that had a million things going on, and everything was super exciting.
Yeah. And and with the fact that they're kind of making this into a big thing, it does make me kind of have my antenna up with him that this could be a really special one coming up in November.
That's true. That's a good point.
The Twin Gate match that we talked about before, Not Hug defending against Kondo and Jiro. Minorita contra Mini Skywalker, Gold Class versus Zebrats, All Out War, Minora, Benkei, BB Hulk, Mochizuki Jr. versus Shun Skywalker, Kai, Ishin, and Jason Lee. I guess this is what we kind of got to decide. Who's going to get possession of Tumi Hayakawa?
Well, I have to apologize here because an hour ago I hinted at Junior turning heel and then I never got back to it. And
yeah.
The argument for Junior turning heel is that this is what's happened to him in all of his previous friendships, whether it was Ishin or whether it was Kato, is that they seem to join up with him and then they wrestle Zebrats on a big show and they turn and join Zebrats. And I guess the argument there is maybe Minora saves Minorita, Gold Class thinks they have peace, and then Junior turns heel. Do I think it's likely? No. Do I want it to happen? No. Can I rule it out? Also, no.
I like that as a 1% chance.
I know, right? It's something worth mentioning.
Yep. Brave Gate is before that. Daya, Junta, Miyawaki. And then we get to our three undercard matches. Couple of interesting ones here. We talked about KZ and Ryoya Tanaka. That's opening the show. But match three, Paradox, original Jimmies, Susumu Yokosuka and Kagetora versus Yuzushi Kanda and La Estrella. I'm into this a lot, actually, the more I look at it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Susumu can make us buy into La Estrella again. Now, I'm higher on Estrella than most. I think he actually has a place on the card. His presence does not bother me whatsoever. So, yeah, no, this is one of those that could end up being, if it has 8 minutes instead of 4 minutes, it could end up being a really, really fun match.
Yeah, really. I mean, like, I'm hoping for a fun 8-minute sprint. And the 4 minutes can go to Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Toru Iwashi versus Hoho Lun. And then the other, Hori and Reach Tomonaga, the new Kung Fu Masters.
Yeah, I'm good on that one.
And then KZ and Ryoya Tanaka open up Dangerous Gate 2024 for us. Again, that is this Monday. It's a national holiday in Japan. The start time is 4 o'clock local in Yokohama. That is on the 12th, and we'll be back with you next week to talk all about it. Case, anything else you want to touch on before we got out of here?
I don't think so. It should be a good show. You know, I don't think it's going to be a great show. I don't think it's possible for it to be a great show. It should be a very good show. So we will have a quick turnaround there, and we'll talk about that next Tuesday.
Yep, it sounds good. Yeah, I'm... My one hope from this, from Gate of Bayside, I want them to turn off the house lights. That's my one hope for the show. But the turnaround, I feel like, did a little bit to it. I mean, we talked about Yamato and Kakuta not necessarily having a lot of tooth to it. But I'm really into the Gold Class versus Z-Brats angle coming out of that. So I have some pretty high hopes for that.
Yeah, but, as am I. That is, I think, for people like you and I think that's the main draw on this show.
Absolutely. And as you said, we will be back next week, next Tuesday, to talk all about it. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.